tackling tough topics to help you think reasonably about life's most important issues. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to the fifth episode of our season called The Simple-Minded Society. I'm Ryan Ragazine, and I am the host of the Thinker Sensitive podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about a particular kind of bias, algorithmic bias. Have you ever felt like a website or social network has you pegged? Have you ever felt like your feed on Facebook is only representative of friends of a particular political or religious persuasion? Or that what you see on your feed is simply a reflection of yourself, like you're looking in a mirror? Have you ever wondered who controls what you see and what you don't see online? Have you ever wondered if you're seeing things that others aren't seeing? Who is to blame for this? The answer to this question is quite complex, and it's certainly not unequivocal or unilateral in nature. When you visit a museum or cathedral, hike in a mountain range or in a canyon, or even go to a gym, you'll likely notice an echo, to one varying degree or another, as sound reverberates and bounces off walls and other hard, solid surfaces. According to an article from the Smithsonian by Jennifer Nalewicki, one of the most iconic buildings in the town of Hamilton, located 15 miles southeast of Glasgow, is the Hamilton Mausoleum. But it's what takes place inside its walls that makes it so intriguing. Built in the mid-1800s, as a burial tomb for the 10th Duke of Hamilton, the 123-foot-tall Roman-style building was long billed as home of the longest-lasting echo of any man-made structure in the world, thanks to its sheer size and shape. In fact, a single slam of its entrance door reverberates off the domed structure for a full 15 seconds. The Hamilton Mausoleum is a great example of a physical echo chamber. On today's podcast, we are going to be talking about, at least in part, online echo chambers. Instead of the reverberations of mere sounds, we're going to be talking about the reverberations of ideas, opinions, presuppositions, biases, beliefs, truisms, ideologies, and worldviews. In preparation for this episode, I recently watched the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. It was definitely informative, but also a bit over my head. I'm not a programmer, I'm not a coder. So when it comes to the issue of algorithmic bias or online bias, I'm a bit of a novice, certainly a layperson. But a good philosopher needs to know a little bit about a lot of stuff. So I'm going to try to do my best to present this material because I think it's extremely important. And it directly relates to the notion of simple-mindedness. Before we begin, the only critique I have of The Social Dilemma is that I feel like it places a little too much blame on the tech industry and not quite enough blame on the consumers. The consumer, the society, the masses are not simply the passive victims here, but we are active participants in the problem, in the dilemma. So how does algorithmic bias work? That's a complicated question. The Social Dilemma documentary starts off with the notion of so-called surveillance capitalism. Remember that song by The Police? Every breath you take, every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take, I'll be watching you. every single day and every word you say, every game you play, every night you stay, I'll be watching you. That's basically what's taking place with regard to our online activity. Mass comprehensive data collection, data analysis, data processing that's based on every move we make online. What you click on, what you search for, the info you insert into any form that you fill out online, the videos you watch, the pictures you look at, how long you watch things and look at things, the pages you follow, the ads you click on, etc., etc., etc. This comprehensive surveillance of all of your online activity is a means to an end. The careful tracking and close monitoring of your activity on the interwebs is a means to the end goal of making a profit through advertisements, whether for the big tech company, the online network or platform that hosts and runs the ads, or the private company that made the ad and paid for it. The processing of all of your online data is done for the purpose of creating a kind of model, a kind of avatar, or even a kind of caricature or stereotype of who you are. The documentary talks about how, through all of this online surveillance, the algorithms are creating a model of your behavior, your personality, your neuroses, your likes and dislikes, your interests, your tendencies, your presuppositions, and your beliefs. The algorithms then use these models in order to make predictions, to predict our online actions for the sake of making a profit through advertisements. Let me give a personal example. As a podcaster and a content creator, I use ads on social media. In an online landscape of great competition, you basically have to pay money in order to get your name out there, in order to be heard and seen. Marketing and promoting is by far my least favorite part of this gig, but it's something that you absolutely have to do. When you create an ad on Facebook or Instagram, their ad system, through the activity of their algorithms, makes predictions for you. It predicts how much engagement you'll receive, how many link clicks you'll get, and how many views you'll receive based on your target audience, how many days you run the ad, and how much money you pay for the ad. So these are the kinds of predictions that algorithms are making for advertisers to induce advertisers to pay the social media company to run their ad so that the social media company makes money. The documentary also talks about how, in this process, the algorithms are basically designed to manipulate human psychology in order to get us to keep using, to keep engaging, to keep inviting more friends with the end goal of ad revenue. I thought the connection that they make between using and drug addiction is particularly insightful. Just like the drug user, the social media user becomes an addict. This goes hand in hand with some of the characterizations that I made in the intro of this season. The masses, the consumers, the users of social media are like lab rats, prisoners, pawns, puppets. We become merely actors, not thinkers. We simply do what the big tech companies want us to do. We simply see what the big tech companies want us to see. But like I said earlier, we're not simply victims of the system, but culprits as well. Algorithms don't fulfill their purposes in a vacuum. They're influenced through both programmer bias and personal bias, the bias of the user. Racism and sexism have both been identified in algorithms, which have mostly been created by young, white males. Again, algorithms are essentially programmed to make generalizations about us and to make predictions based on those generalizations. To me, it's akin to a kind of stereotyping or labeling. But it's important to understand that it's often our own personal biases that inform the generalizations being made and the predictions being made from those generalizations. An algorithm is able to stereotype me because I'm biased, to one degree or another, and in one way or another. Once an algorithm has you pegged, it then is programmed to feed you a particular flavor of content in accordance with your label, which again is based on personal biases. An obvious example of this would be a person who's pegged or labeled as a conservative. And so she just constantly gets fed a bunch of articles and videos from Fox News. The Social Dilemma talks about how there's a whole recommendation system on social media that induces people to go down long rabbit holes in accordance with their perceived interests. Rabbit holes that can feed into people's delusions and neuroses. Like if people have a leaning towards conspiracy theories, for example. All of this creates echo chambers that exploit natural biases and censor alternative ideas and perspectives. Our presuppositions and prejudices just get reinforced over and over and over again as we scroll through our feeds. Unfortunately, the partisan content that gets filtered through to our social media feeds is often antagonistic, contentious, and vilifies those who think differently. This is because clickbait, propaganda, controversial material, provocative titles and headlines, extremist rhetoric, and radical ideas simply sell better and get more clicks in our culture. Good news, news that makes money, is often bad news. Bad news is what sells in our society. In the same way, fake news is simply more engaging, interesting, and attention-getting than real news. It spreads like wildfire in our culture. Hey, for many, it's what pays the bills. But all of this perpetuates and exacerbates hostility, division, polarization, dogged partisanship, intolerance, and hatred in our current climate. This situation or dilemma can easily lead to the shrinking of the public sphere and the diminishing of a free marketplace of ideas as echo chambers that far too often become radicalized, greatly reduce exposure to and opportunities to engage with reasonable, thoughtful, and intelligent alternative points of view. We get to a point where we start to believe that the vast majority of the people in the world think exactly like we do, or at least should think exactly like we do. In the age of social media, on top of algorithmic bias, you get this notion of popularity bias. In this context, popularity bias basically means that the content with the most clicks, the most engagement, the most shares, is the content that becomes most visible online. Now let me ask you a question. How often would you trust the consensus opinions or inclinations or sensibilities of the masses? Let me use music as an example here, but I need to give some background real quick. I'm a musician and a songwriter. I've been playing music and writing music for over 20 years now. I think I can say, without too much bias here, that I have a good taste in music. Some would probably call me a music snob, which is fine. I can't think of a ton of popular artists today that I actually like. This is why I don't listen to the radio. So the arena of music is one area where I don't really personally trust the consensus opinions of the masses. I actually tend to expect, at least in some way, that the more popular the artist, the worse the artist will be. Of course, there are plenty of exceptions. But in my experience, and based on my personal preferences, this seems to be the case, at least for the most part. And I think we can make similar observations in other areas of life as well. Simple-mindedness and popularity bias enable articles and headlines from unreputable sources, memes and tweets from uncritical thinkers, and ads from outlets with clear political and cultural agendas to go viral for all the world to see. Because of over-inundation and the busyness of life, we too often interact with and share this content uncritically in an all too careless and casual way. Then you have the issue of bots and third parties, accounts that feed on bias and simple-mindedness and spread misinformation, low-credibility sources, and fake stories. These accounts have been known to manipulate public opinion, control national narratives, and influence human and societal action. Pizzagate, which seems to have largely spread through Twitter bots, is a great example of this. But this is serious. Arson and assault with a dangerous weapon both transpired through the propagation and transmission of a conspiracy theory known as Pizzagate. You can't make this stuff up. The sad part is that media sources, blogs, podcasts, and news outlets that think critically and care about what is true and care about being somewhat impartial are ignored by or made invisible to the general public because their headlines don't get clicks. In the end, the combination of algorithmic bias, popularity bias, echo chambers, and personal confirmation bias leads to the blind acceptance of a plethora of partisan ideas, whether those ideas are true or not, whether they correspond to reality and human experience or not, whether they are coherent or not. This can be a form of indoctrination and brainwashing. But the blood is not simply on the hands of the big tech companies, the social media platforms, and the programmers. It's on our hands as well. It's our biases and our simple-mindedness that makes the wheels go round. The current online landscape doesn't create balance. It doesn't create inclusivity, diversity, tolerance, openness, and unity. Instead, it opposes these things. It makes us more biased, more partisan, more close-minded, more hostile and contentious, more dogmatic, more divided, more exclusive, more intolerant, more hateful, less informed, and more simple-minded. So what can we do about this? Let's conclude this podcast by looking at some possible solutions. We can build public awareness and create public pressure. We can diversify our follows and friends on social media. We can use news outlets and media platforms that are more balanced, more centrist, more somewhere in the middle. We can expose ourselves to different ideas and perspectives. I've talked about that a lot so far during the course of this season. We can use academic, scholarly, and reputable sources to get our information. Don't get your news from magazines and tabloids. Don't get your information from mainstream media and news outlets. If you do, listen to both conservative and liberal takes on individual issues. Remember, there are always two sides to a story. Also, definitely don't get your news and info from uneducated online content creators who lack formal academic credentials. Sources matter. Credentials matter. Academic achievements and qualifications matter. Find nonpartisan, trustworthy, and authoritative sources. Sometimes where you got the information is more important than the information itself. We can also choose to stop using the recommendation system. We can choose to make our own choices and our own selections instead. We can also quit clicking on clickbait. And we can choose to always fact-check the information before we share the content. We can choose to share content responsibly, but we have to actually desire, we have to actually want the changes that I'm suggesting here. There has to be a transformation of heart and mind on a societal level. Honestly, I'm not sure how many people really want to get outside of their echo chambers to sincerely search for truth, wherever it may be found. Is our current landscape the landscape that most people actually desire and actually want? I don't know. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you soon. This episode, and all episodes of Thinkersensitive, are available at thinkersensitive.com, iTunes, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content and wish to donate to help us grow our online community of thinkers, please visit thinkersensitive.com.